Wacky Addict, living one mentally ill-addictive day at a time. Episode 1, Introduction to Our Family, Our Mental Illnesses, Addictions, and Struggles. So I'm the Wacky Addict, well, my real name is Isaac, and I've been struggling with and dealing with mental illness and addiction for many years, lots of my life, most of my life. And I've had lots of people help me get through a lot of things. And so I'm doing this now because I feel I need to give back, and I really wanted to help people. In the past, I tried to write an ebook about like my experiences and what things like that and how I could help. I've written an ebook before, and it was really hard, for one thing, and took a long time, and ended up not being a whole lot of pages long, so I still have it on Amazon, but so I knew how hard it was, and every time I tried to write this about myself, it just didn't work out. It just never was right, so I tried many times, and same thing. So a little while ago, I was looking into podcasts and, you know, what they are, how they work and stuff, and I started thinking of my experiences, and my mind started going forward instead of like the ebook where it just didn't feel like it was going to be right. So, you know, I started thinking, well, I could talk about this and this, and I can handle this and that, and so I decided, well, hey, maybe I can basically not write an ebook, but do some podcasts that'll really maybe help others, and no matter, you know, what where they're at in mental illness and addictions, or if family has them, or their friends. So, if you do have mental illness, or you have a family member or friend who are struggling with both the mental illness and addictions, then, you know, this is the right place. I not only have my own struggles, stories, lessons, and all that kind of stuff, but my wife struggles with both too. She has for a long time. Her mental illnesses are more extreme than mine, and she, after 10 years, has still yet to find relief, basically. I'll talk more about that later, but so you're in the right place if you really want to listen to this, I want you to be able to, you know, and help you to, you know, take it like me, kind of, and take it one mentally ill, addictive day at a time also. So this first episode here is I want to introduce myself and then tell you my story, not my autobiography, but basically how and the reasons or whatever, what I went through, how I found out about being, having a mental disorder, having bipolar disorder, how I didn't know and stuff like that. So I want you to, you know, get comfortable with me knowing that, you know, I know what I'm talking about here. I've been on both sides, basically, my own and then my wife helping her. So, and then, you know, and also doing this while raising a family too. So I just want everybody to get comfortable listening to me, and so that, you know, they're not, what is this? I don't know what he's talking about. So I'm going to start off here by doing that. I'm going to tell you that. And then after that, I'm just going to give you some examples of what I'm going to discuss in the future and talk about, and, you know, try to help others. So first of all, my name is Isaac. I'm 44 years old. I have bipolar disorder, OCD, and I also am ADD. So I live in a little Wyoming town here. I'm from Wyoming. I live with my wife, and I have a 9-year-old daughter. We do. We both get SSDI, Social Security, for our mental disorders. And I don't really do hobbies and all this. Basically, I try to just try to survive and raise my daughter as normal as possible. You know, I do things here and there, but one thing being on SSDI is kind of hard to go out and do stuff with no money for one thing. But and I live in a little Wyoming town. But you know, we do things here and there. But mostly I do stuff with my daughter. I really don't have. I'm a welder by trade. I taught myself how to do that. I taught myself how to develop web pages, to code, to build mobile apps. I've done a little internet marketing. So basically, I just kind of teach myself and do stuff online. Is really only thing else I do. Kind of lame. So I just want to go into a little bit here. I'm just going to say this first part because it's going to be, you'll see where I mention it later and how it applies to what I'm saying here. But when I was 5 years old, I was on my bike and I went out in the street and a big Wonder Bread truck hit me. Put me in the hospital and I got a concussion from that. So, you know, just kind of remember that and I'll get back to that a little later. So, from up to the age of 12, you know, I had a great childhood and my great parents and everything. But when I was 12 years old, I smoked some weed for the first time. And basically from then on till later on, 12 to 18 through high school, I smoked a lot of weed, you know, and I drank and partied here and there. I didn't really drink as much then, but I smoked a lot of weed. So when I graduated from high school, I moved to Phoenix, and there I started not only using a lot of meth, but I also was a meth dealer. And, you know, all through the years, I did other things. I mushrooms and acid and tried coke and crack, and I never, you know, did it all the time. I came across it, I did it, you know. Never used heroin or anything, but I did little things like that, too. And then, when I turned 21, you know, I kind of thought, this is enough. I'm over it. It's time to quit. Plus, my meth dealer, he just got busted, and things were getting a little weird. So, I decided to leave, and I went back to Wyoming. I moved back in with my mom and dad. And I got a job and just, you know, started trying to live. So, you know, but I was 21, so now I could legally drink. So, as the months and years start going, a trend started happening. I did a job, and then for unknown reasons that I had no idea at the time, I would get severely depressed, so bad to the point where I couldn't even get out of the corner. And for those who, you know, don't have bipolar or severe depression and don't know what that's like, it looks not good. My mom would be like, what are you doing? You're going to lose another job. Why just get up and go to work? Why can't you just get up and go to work? But I couldn't. I couldn't move. And, you know, even doctors who know what it is, but if you've never actually experienced it, you know, it's hard to actually understand unless you do. But that's basically what it is. You literally can't move. And so, during this point, I would drink. I'd self-medicate myself. You know, I started off little. And then I'd get past it, get another job, happen again. Start drinking more and more. And this was a cycle. And it still is. The cycle has never ended. I just had to learn how to cope with it and deal with it. But I didn't know what was going on, you know. So, this was going on. And then in 1996, I was drinking, got a DUI, I got in a car crash, I rolled my car. I could have died if I didn't have a seatbelt on, I probably would have. It busted me up pretty good. A little later on, I was drunk, running down some cement stairs, and I don't remember anything, but I landed on my head on the cement bottom, and the next thing I remembered, I woke up in the hospital, and there was a police officer there, and he said he had just gotten back on shift. He was sitting with me last night, but he told me, when I got back on shift this morning, I didn't think you were actually going to be here. I thought you were going to be gone, and I don't mean that you were going to be checked out, because I was in intensive care. They actually thought I was going to die. So, you know, there are just a few things that have happened to me that I just wanted to state. You know, I've almost died quite a few times, actually. So later on, in 2003, I got drunk. I got kicked out of my apartment. I was living in my truck, so I wasn't even going anywhere. But I was up in the hills, and a sheriff came up, and he gave me DUI. I was sleeping. I wasn't even in the driver's seat. Actually, you know, in law, I beat that one. But anyway, they took me to jail. I got out. Not maybe a week after that, I got another DUI. And not long after that, a few days after that, I got another DUI. So this time, I wasn't getting out of jail. There was no getting in jail. Well, the third time I was in jail, I had had an alcoholic seizure before, and it is very unpleasant, let me tell you. But I could feel it coming on, and next thing I knew, I was in the hospital. They said I had a seizure. I was trying to walk it off. Well, I fell and hit the sink, and if you've ever seen a jail sink, it's the toilet and the sink are solid metal. So I still have a scar on my head. They had to stitch it. And so I ended up staying in jail for 68 days. But, you know, this is where, you know, I don't want to get a DUI and go to jail or anything, but, excuse me, this is where I actually had a hope and an idea that what was wrong with me. I had no idea. I thought I was just some weirdo before. I had no clue. You know, my dad's been in the same job for 45 years, about to retire. Everybody else that stays at a job, if I can make it a couple months, I was doing it. So, but I was talking to a guy who was in jail with me, and I was telling him about myself, my story a little bit, and he said, "Wow, dude, you sound just like me, man." I went to a psychiatrist and I got, I can't remember the medications. He says, "You should see a doctor, man. Maybe some medications will help you." So when I got out, you know, I told my mom and dad this, and a little town, I'm from Wyoming. I moved around a lot, but didn't have any kind of doctor. So I went to another place, 100 miles away, and the doctor diagnosed me with bipolar disorder. So, you know, I saw him. I started taking his medication. It didn't seem to do anything. I called him up. He had increased it. Wasn't doing anything. I called him up, and he disappeared. He was gone. Nothing was really working yet, basically. So, then my mom understood, and she's like a huge expert now. I mean, she's probably read every book, so she actually understands. But, you know, she doesn't, like I said, she's never had severe depression, but she knows what it is, but doesn't understand why. But, you know, and my mom and dad have been one of my key supporters over the years. I mean, they've helped me through a whole lot. But I still was, you know, cycling here. Depression, job, drinking. And I was with my parents, and my mom and dad do not, no matter what, they don't tolerate getting drunk. So I was drinking, and they said I had to leave. So I was living under a bridge. And I don't know if you've ever seen the show Intervention. I was like some of them, worse than most of them. I mean, I was pretty bad, seriously. So I was in the bridge, and one day I got drunk. I went down to my parents' house. They called the cops, put me in jail for public intoxication. They got out. We got another bottle, got drunk, went back to my mom and dad's house, called the cops, put me in jail again. They got out, got more booze, went back to my mom and dad's, and guess what? Ended up in jail. And that next morning when I woke up in the drunk tank, the jailer said, "Man, I really feel sorry for you having to see this judge after this third time." And so I went to court, and my parents were there. So they talked to the judge, and they said, "Well, we found a place for him. In the town I live now, there really wasn't anything." So they took me to Riverton, Wyoming, which I was probably not familiar with Wyoming. There's Riverton, it's about the center of Wyoming, and then 30, 40 miles away, there's Lander. They're not very big, they're small. Lander's really small, Riverton's a little bigger. But they built a detox center there. There's many people there that kind of homeless. They go to the park, they get drunk, the cops pick them up. Well, they kind of got a lot of money, and they got tired of taking them to Lander to the jail back and forth. So they built a detox center, and so they get drunk, the cops take him to detox. They sleep it off. When they blow zeros on the breathalyzer, they let him go. Later on that day, they come back. They just lot them over and over. But the detox also has a place you can stay if you'd like. So you can stay. They have some beds and stuff. So I was staying there. You know, you do AAs, you do some groups and stuff. And I was trying. The goal was to get into a treatment center. Well, 45 days I was there, and I wasn't in a treatment center, and I had a little job, and I decided, you know, I pretty much was thinking, yeah, I'm going to do these, and I always feel myself, I don't drink anymore, I feel good, and I've been here, and so I left, and I went into a weekly motel, and I started staying there after I got my check, and again, I started drinking. Well, this time, I was drinking, and a couple days later, I started getting really sick, and so I stopped drinking, and the next day, I was sicker, and the next day, I was sicker. I couldn't drink or eat anything, but yet, I just kept throwing up. I don't know really what it was, but I started cramping. I was really scared, so eventually, after like 4 or 5 days, I called an ambulance. They took me to the hospital, and they took an MRI, or a CAT scan, or whatever, and they told me I had pancreatitis. So, very, very unpleasant thing, let me tell you. You know, the pancreas controls your insulin, so I took a test after and ended up being borderline diabetic after that. So, I got out of there, and I went back to detox. Now, I'm going to back up just a little bit here. When I first went to detox, a little while after that, I met my future wife. She was there. She was there for meth something. I really don't know the exact thing still, but for meth. So she was there, and we became friends, you know. We hung out a lot until I left, and she came down to visit me when I was drinking in the hotel, and it really freaked her out. So my wife's had a really, really rough childhood. Lots of things happened when she was 14, or mother just abandoned her in Du Bois, Wyoming. She had some foster parents. She got out. She went to the Navy. She's really, really smart. Did all this electronic stuff. She was on a big battleship, and she was in charge of the button that shoots missiles. So anyway, later on when I was, well, I'll go back to me now. So I went to detox again. And then, it wasn't too long, about a week, I went to a Sheridan, to a treatment center. I stayed there for 2.5 months. I graduated. Then I went back to detox. I had to wait for a bed for an after treatment. I was there 30 days, and then I went to Lander, Wyoming for 3 months to the WINS after treatment. And so I went through all this, and, you know, all this pretty close to a year or so, or well, maybe not quite, but somewhere in there, 8, 9 months or something like that. And then, you know, I graduated there, and I had a little job. Mine are small, there's not much work. So, but I had a little job, and I got a really little place, and, you know, going good for a little, and guess what? I started drinking again. Well, from the first time I went to detox, I started seeing a nurse practitioner that she specializes in mental illness stuff, so she'd be giving me meds. So, you know, I still hadn't found the right med. It took me a long time. She'd give me a med. It either would, you know, it wouldn't work, or maybe start to a little, but had a side effect like high blood pressure or this or that. So here I am still, you know, trying to find something to help. And I ended up drinking again there. And this was the worst binge drunk I ever had. I got to the point where I couldn't walk to the liquor store anymore. I had to ride my bike. And eventually I called the detox center, and they came and got me. I was really bad. I got there. I had seizures. I couldn't walk for like 3 weeks. I could walk, but I was like a little old man. They all made fun of me later. Seriously, I still don't know why. I could barely put my foot in front of the other. I eventually, took about 3 weeks, I could start walking again. Well, at this time, you know, after all this treatment and stuff, I was really, really discouraged and disappointed and stuff. And, you know, I really didn't know what to do. You know, if none of this works, nothing's ever going to work. So, but I was pretty tired of being in detox for so many times. So eventually, after 30 days, I think, I went to, it was a little homeless shelter, a little trailer. I went there. There was Riverton, no work really, couldn't really do anything. So I did a little job for a guy in AA, got a bus ticket, and I moved to Castellam. So I got there, I stayed in their homeless shelter. That's, you know, I eventually got an apartment. It's a whole other story. So I was in Casper now, and but when I was in the Wind, we had taken a trip, our whole group, to Riverton, and in Walmart, I ran into my future wife again. So we exchanged numbers and stuff, and I called her a couple times, and, you know, wasn't really thought of it, but I was working as a welder in Casper, and I had my own place by now, little itty bitty. I tell you what, I was homeless. It's a really kind of weird story. I'm not going to get into it, but I had this really little, dinky, nasty kind of apartment. But when I walked in, first thing I did, I kissed that dirty carpet. I was so happy not to be homeless anymore. It's not a pleasant, fun thing. But anyway, but out of the blue, I was working, and my wife calls. She's on running from parole or probation, and she wanted someplace she could go and think. So I said, you know, we were just friends. I said, sure, come on in, you can hang out for a little bit. So she took a bus, came down, and she was there for a little. She got a job. She got her a car, but she was driving her car to get license plates one day, and the cops pulled her over and found out she was a probation violator. So they told her, you can either go to this long, extensive treatment program for 1 to 2 years or jail. So she went to the treatment, but it didn't last long. She left and ended up going to Lander, and she spent a year in county jail. So when she was staying with me, though, we started falling in love. And so while she was in jail, we wrote back and forth, and I noticed as time went on, the letters started getting really, really bizarre. So, so after a year, she got out, and she was just not doing good. Seriously, I would start seeing the same doctor I did, and after a little while, she tried to kill herself by ODing a couple times. I wouldn't have been there. She might have. I rushed her to the hospital. They pumped her stomach and stuff. And after the second time, she went to a little hospital there, and they told her she was pregnant. So, eventually, you know, my wife now, they still have never pinpointed. They say first impression, but they say bipolar. And she's also got ADHD, but severe PTSD from a lot of things in her life, but something that she's never told, won't even tell me. All I know is this is the Navy, the battleship, and 9/11. But she won't tell anybody, really. So, and this is really affects her. She has a lot of other things too, but she's taken almost every medication there is, and therapies, and classes, and this and that, and she still struggles, having a hard time. She kind of takes something now that helps her a little bit more, but still, she's not even close. So, you know, it's been a challenge. So after that, I got a job in Craig, Colorado. I got a job. And I had a therapist there named Anthony, and he heard my story, and especially the part about where I got ran over by a Wonder Bridge truck when I was 5. So he had me take a brain test and found out that I have some brain damage, especially my short-term memory, which all the drugs don't help that either, but my short-term memory and other things. And then he explained to me what happens and why. Basically, I end up losing a job and getting depressed like that. I stress and everything, and certain things when I'm working would trigger my depression. And it was a cycle, and he explained it to me, and it, you know, made a lot of sense. And so, you know, this is where I also got ADD too. I have ADD, I think, because of that. So, you know, I was seeing him, I got a job, same thing happened. And I was also now seeing a new psychiatrist. This is the doctor that finally, I finally got the right meds. I was taking a couple different meds then, but I still take the main medication now. It's been a long time. It's the one, I mean, adjustments and tweaks and adding this and everything else along the way, but I hadn't, you know, it hadn't really been working, so I had a pretty good job there, and then I lost it, and then I started working part-time at another place, and same thing happened, and I said, forget it, you know, my wife applied for Social Security, she got it right away, easily. I applied, not so easy, it took close to a year for me to actually get it. I got denied, I had to appeal it, and then I had to go to a court and have someone, you know, there was a person that helped me to get it, so I eventually got it, so we both eventually got it, and which is good. So, my daughter was born in Craig, and after a couple of years, we decided to move to Stagecoach, which is right outside of Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Lived there for a little. My wife was getting worse and worse. We moved to Steamboat, and continuously, she's done classes, the doctors, the therapists, the counselors, and then after, you know, a while, I took her to Salt Lake to a hospital, and she stayed there a week, went and got her, and they, people there observed her, and they insisted that doing ECTs, electroconvulsive therapy, would be the answer. This is what she needed. Now, may not be familiar with ECTs, it's pretty much the last resort. You may have seen things on TV. It's not really like barbaric or like for the A-Team where he sticks those things on his head and electrocutes himself. But they do, you know, it took 2 hours. She'd go in, they'd sedate her, drug her up, and then they electrocute her brain, basically. It's like a millisecond or a second or something like that. They send an electrocution. So they said that's it. So she went back and talked to the doctor, the counselor, and they said, we really don't think that's going to do, but this hospital that has been watching her, professionals, they were adamant and insistent that that was it. So we picked up our life and moved to Denver, Colorado, because there was no place around there that did that. So she got into a place. We lived there a year. For 10 months, she did ECTs. I'm going to go into ECT in a later episode, but it works, you know, for some people it doesn't. My wife, no, it didn't work, not only that, but she lost a lot of long-term memories because of it, and like I said, I'll get into that maybe in a later episode. So, after 10 months, you know, they wanted her to keep going. She did it, like, pretty much weekly. At first, she did it more, but every week, but I said, nah, forget it, you're just pretty much frying yourself here. So, we wanted to go back to Steamboat, but, you know, I want to get out of Denver anyway. I've never been to Denver. The town ain't bad, but the traffic's, good grief, man. I hated driving. I hated, dreaded that driving around. So I want to go back smaller, but I decided to move back to Wyoming, where I am now, and where my mom and dad are. This is better. My daughter's getting older now, so it's going to be better for her. They only see her 2-3 times a year. So now they can see her all the time, and it helps us out too, you know, if something's going on, they take care of her for a little bit. So now we're here, we've been here for a year and a half. My wife's still, same thing. I continue to struggle. I have OCD, bipolar, ADHD, and also I have diabetes now. The whole time I wasn't sober all the time, but still drinking here and there. Do I drink? Every day once in a while, me and my wife, when my daughter is not here with my parents, we drink a little, which I don't need to do, you know. Drinking and medications don't work. Drinking and a bad pancreas don't work. When I got out of the hospital, because they say, you keep drinking, you're going to die. So, but, you know, for the most part, I was nothing like I was. So, but, you know, I have to cope with all these things, and then I have to raise my family. I raise my family the best I can, my daughter. So, you know, there's a good chance maybe she may have mental disorder when she's older, because we both do, I don't know. But I want, you know, she knows we're sick, basically. She doesn't understand it, but So, you know, it's my job now, basically, and this is what I've had to learn to do, is not only keep myself in line and my disorders and addictions, help myself recognize what's going to happen, what could happen. If my meds aren't right, how did I had to learn to control because of, you know, stressing out, I lose job. So I had to redo my stress. You know, I used to worry about, you know, next week, next week, tomorrow. Oh, no. Now I had to train myself to something I'm going to stress about. It's gone until like 2 minutes before I have to do it. And I still can't stress. So it's kind of hard to explain, but I've had to train myself, and I've had a lot of experiences and things that I've had to go through and things I've had to do. I have a lot of knowledge. I have a lot of doctor knowledge, and I have a lot of non-doctor knowledge, which, you know, that's knowledge that only someone who's actually going through things like this can know. So, if that makes sense. And so, not only that, but 10 years I've been, you know, kind of my wife's second doctor, counselor, therapist, plus a husband, caretaker. She has a lot of anxiety and stuff too. I have to, you know, be with her a lot and stuff like that too. So she really struggles. So I've had to, you know, learn to help her and help her deal and help her be positive and help, you know, help her all along and then help herself raise our daughter and stuff like that. So that's why I wanted to tell you, you know, share all this because, I have had a lot of experiences. I've learned a lot of lessons. I've learned this. I've tried this. I've done that. You know, for alcoholism, no matter what, things that treatments I've done, things that work, things for my mental illness that have worked, that not have worked. I'm not saying that everything that's worked for me would work for you and vice versa and all that, but I would like, that's why I want to share and try to help as many, you know, others that who are, you know, having problems, maybe, or, you know, some advice or some comfort even. So, that's basically, my story up to now. And, I really hope I can help you or others that are, you know, struggling or trying to maintain life, basically. It's really hard, even no matter what you're doing. So I've basically learned to kind of keep myself stable, and to recognize things that might happen to make me unstable and certain things like that. So I just wanted to share that, and I hope everyone is comfortable with what I'm saying, and, you know, comfortable on future topics that I'm going to discuss. So, and speaking of that, so some of the topics that briefly here, I know I've been going on, but I've tried to, you know, go as fast as I could. So, but you know, my next episode is going to be dual diagnosis, which is having a mental illness and struggling with an addiction at the same time. And then after that, I'm going to have my mental illness management blueprint. So what that means is I'm not going to go through my life story here again. I'm going to kind of tell you how I've dealt with things and the processes and the steps and the medication and things that I've kind of learned that have all along the way that's taken, you know, quite a long time. You know, I was diagnosed like 13 years ago, but I've had this at least for 23 or more years, in addiction longer than that. So, and after that, you know, like I said, I'll go into an ECTs. Maybe some people are wondering, how do you get Social Security? I'm going to do an episode on that. You know, trigger some things like triggers, how to cope with a relapse, maybe other treatments like AA and stuff, medicines, doctors, counselors, and therapists, and, you know, stuff like this. So there'll be more. A lot of people, I have a friend for many years that are either ashamed or they won't accept that they have a mental illness. It's like, oh, no way, like freaks them out or whatever, but, or they're ashamed, you know, they don't take it. They take meds or they take meds and they still drink and stuff like that, but they're ashamed. They won't admit it, basically. And there's, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of. If if you're diabetic and you have to take insulin like me, then, you know, what's the big deal? You just take a pill that makes you feel better? Good. There's nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, I don't go blurting it to everybody. Hey, I'm this. And, but, you know, but that's another one, too. So I'm gonna go through a lot more. There'll be more topics than that, two episodes. So I hope you come back and find the time to let me talk some more, I guess, on different subjects. So with that, I really, really want to thank you. And I know it takes time out of a busy schedule, no matter what, to sit here and listen to me, listen to what I have to say. I really appreciate that. You know, I want to help others, and hopefully I can learn some things, too. And so I just want to ask, you know, if you know other people, share this with them. Write a review. This will help everybody. Or, you know, if you know people who may be having problems personally or maybe somewhere else, social media or something, maybe you could help out a little. So the more, you know, the more that are subscribed to listen and I can help, the better. I really appreciate that. So with that, I'm going to end here, and I'll talk to you in the next episode. Thank you.